Well, this is got to make Stan Weber feel like he's in question of what time it is, because he's in here on a Friday with Todd Lebo.
4 o'clock.
Right?
4 o'clock. 4 p.m.
Rolled right in.
Is it 6 a.m. or is it 4 p.m.?
6:24 a.m. Close, though.
No traffic, though, right?
No traffic anytime.
That was always the challenge of the 4 o'clock on a Friday.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm at the light at 115th.
Everybody's in the car by 4 o'clock
on
Friday.
Did I make it each time, though?
Almost. We always, always made it.
Yeah.
Sometimes walking in on the phone and then put the phone down and get on the microphone.
I did that a couple times.
Boom. Yeah. That was always the fun stuff. Hey, he's on the phone. Wait, there he is right there. He's here.
Stan Weber.
I did...
Mr. Automatic.
Yeah. I pushed my brakes Monday.
Oh, I know. You told me about this story.
I had not really pushed my brakes driving to or from work on the highway for like, whatever, 5 months. But Monday, I actually drove past my exit, so it doesn't really count that I pushed my brakes. But I didn't push my brakes because of any real traffic. I pushed my brakes because this guy in this box truck was merging onto 470 from 50 Highway, and I was kind of boxing.
People are driving a little faster than they used to.
But there was an actual wreck 2 days ago when I was driving home. 2 days ago, there was a real legit wreck at State Line, so it was like...
So you really...
It was like old traffic. I was I was literally stopped.
Well, you guys joke about, you know, is it the morning here or is it like the old days? Let me tell you something that feels like the old days, okay? And you're probably thinking...
Like sports may be happening?
Yeah, like sports. You know?
We actually have games.
Like a game. This, if nothing changes, I'm within 36 hours of going on the air to broadcast for the 34th straight year, 34th straight calendar year, a football game. And I've done the Shrine Bowl, the Kansas Shrine Bowl, all of those years. So this will be my 34th year to broadcast the Kansas Shrine Bowl, either on radio or mostly on TV. And they are planning on having the game. There are 72 kids from around the state of Kansas whose parents signed off, and they signed off on a waiver that said they're not holding anybody accountable for if they were to get COVID-19. They had their best response ever, by the way. Everybody showed up on time. They didn't have a bunch of subs.
Normally,
they're
there. They're practicing. Is this the same week, though?
Yes, this is about the time. It's usually the first football game.
Super hot.
But I'm not going to get cocky and act like it's going to happen because something could change. But as of right now, they've been practicing for a whole week. They're going to kick this off and play real football tomorrow, 7 o'clock, probably on Spectrum, you know, maybe the old Metro Sports. Definitely online, KansasShrineBowl.com. You'll be able to watch it. Cox channels for people who can hear us from a long ways away. They're going to play football, and I think that's important, not only to talk about what might be normal in our lives, but also when we compare and contrast a lot of other subjects we may talk about with football, they're going to play. No money, not even a team. They don't have a Jayhawk or a Missouri Tiger or a Wildcat on their helmet. They're just going there to play, an all-star football game.
Yeah,
72 kids signed off on time, no big deal. They're going to play. That, to me, is encouraging and also starkly contrasting to other things we're hearing.
Part of the reason I think you can go play that is because there is no money involved. Because when there gets to be money involved and there's no waivers, that's when it gets dicey.
But they want to play, man.
I hope
we can say that for everybody. Not everyone's listening at the same time. Like, Todd might not be up if you weren't here today. We may need to say this a couple more times.
Friday's rough sometimes.
Because, Nate, I know you want to talk about some games you're going to be doing here, like tonight. Mm-hmm. So, football tomorrow. Can you imagine how excited I am if I actually get to do
a broadcast? I can see how excited you are right now.
If I actually get to broadcast a game, even if the rest of the season gets wiped out, I'll be able to check for the 34th year. It's on TV.
And where can people watch it?
Either Cox or...
Just sit on Spectrum or Cox or KansasShrineBowl.com.
I'm sure.
Yeah. You can go to all those places.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I think what we've found with most of these sports is nearly every athlete wants to play. Nearly every coach wants to coach. The difficulty turns out being when people get involved in negotiating on what the protocols are and what happens if this happens.
But that's just the nature of an athlete, right?
Well, athletes want to play. Yeah,
yeah. Like when I played, it's like
you want to play hurt.
I want to play no matter what. So it's like we got to protect athletes from themselves because that's their mentality that they've ingrained in themselves, right? Unless I can't walk, I'm going to be on that field. I'm going to do everything in my power to be on that field. And that's what's been ingrained. That's what you create that, right? And so we, you know, as the people that are in charge, the health officials, the coaches, the trainers, they all have to...
Oh, don't forget the lawyers.
That's the biggest part. I honestly think that's the biggest part.
I was waiting for Todd to say lawyers. I'm waiting for you to say lawyers.
Trust me, that's the number one in my mind. I understand how all this works. And but, you know, for the players, they're going to... To your point, Todd, yeah, every player wants to play because that's...
Especially these guys.
That's what they do.
I mean, this is not like, you know, week 13 of some NFL season. This is like an all-star game. Some guys who aren't...
It's an honor. It's an honor to get to play in it.
Whatever.
Well, there's all kinds of little league games going on all over the place.
Sure.
And Nate and Jake are out playing soccer against each other. It's okay for you guys to go play.
We haven't been. Actually,
we've shut that down the last couple weeks.
It's been about 4 weeks now since I've been willing to play. But a lot of our friends have been willing to play. Yeah, a lot of our friends are.
The group.
The league's still going on. Yeah, we've just made our own decisions. But yeah.
Everybody makes their own decisions except for the guys who...
The hardest part about
all the
football, like the college football especially, it's just so many levels of it. We think, oh, college football is college football. Well, there's Division III football, there's Division II football, there's FCS football, there's Division I, and then there's Power 5 Division I, and there's just different levels of... We've talked so much, we just flippantly say, oh, MLS tested 1,400 guys, all negatives. MLB has tested 3,000 people three times a week, okay? Every single one of these has a cost to it.
Oh, yeah.
And there's just not an unlimited amount of money that Division II football has to go test all these kids who are trying to play the games.
Right.
That's the devil's in the details in all of these things.
FBS, Todd, because there's the Big Ten Conference.
Yes.
And then there's a Pac-12 Conference.
And the Sun Belt. And they're all Division I. I mean, it's just...
Hey, Mac Brown just said yesterday he wants a commissioner. A college football commissioner, and we get everybody on the same page.
If it's Lou Holtz, I heard Lou Holtz talking.
No, thanks.
Okay.
Well, he just cut that off, didn't he, Stan?
Yeah.
Last time you heard Lou Holtz. They took Lou Holtz off ESPN for a reason.
Well, Lou Holtz says play.
Yeah.
And did Ed Ogeron do that as well?
Listen, the coaches want to coach, too. They love football. We all want to do what we do, right?
Right.
That's what we want.
You want to broadcast?
Yes. And you know what we want to broadcast? Sports. Because it's what we do. We all want this stuff done, you know? And the difficulty is finding a way to do it.
Well, I tell you what I don't want to do is I don't want to take a break right now, but I feel like we should. We are due for a break. This is 38 The Spot. We got to stay on schedule because we've got a lot to cover with Stan Weber, who predicted the Chris Jones news a while ago, by the way. We'll talk about that and more with Stan Weber right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. Anytime you get some saxophone on a Friday morning...
Is Todd doing this? Are you playing this?
No. I can never...
Jake should be a DJ. Does he do that on weddings on Saturday nights?
He'd be good.
It's very good.
Spin the hits.
Yeah. I can do it.
So
one of the few things.
One of the things we touched on with Stan, when I wasn't asking him questions he'd already answered, I'm off and running. It's on brand for me. This is what I do.
On brand.
Is he saying I'm being disrespectful?
No. I'm making fun of myself.
Long for the question.
It's a long-running joke.
No, I make fun of myself because I do this a lot.
Yeah, okay. Sometimes Nate likes to double question.
Well, it's like the old days. Todd's here, and he just starts talking, and we just start talking, and you know, we don't have scripts, so
we're
off script.
Well, there's so much. I mean, they say it's a sign of high intelligence because you have so much going on in your brain, you can't focus on everything. I read it somewhere. Trust me, I read it somewhere. I was thinking about a lot of the things Stan was saying, and so I missed where the game was.
Is that thing on the TV?
Yeah.
Shrine Bowl is playing tomorrow, 7 o'clock, 6:30 pregame. I'll be on TV. Mark Ewing will be the play-by-play guy, like he's done for many, many years.
He'll be the
34th
short guy
year
in the broadcast booth.
Yeah, the big, tall Kansas Jayhawk basketball guy. Tomorrow, probably on your cable channels. I don't know exactly which ones, Cox and... Spectrum, and then definitely online at KansasShrineBowl.com.
Okay, so you touched on the idea of college football coming back, or it hasn't gone away yet, but are they going to play? Can they play? Should they play? And you said you had some thoughts on that, so I'm going to just open the floor to you before we get into this stuff. Let's talk about this
because I think the NFL is a good example. Let's talk about the NFL first. We'll build our case here together. In the NFL, if they show up, this weekend, the Chiefs and the Texans play first, so they get to show up first. They're about ready to report. If they haven't reported yet, then it's football's off, right? They're not going to the facility, working out, and doing those things. It's their own personal life, period. They're either with the NFL next week, the Chief players, or they're not. pretty easy, right? Like a light switch.
Okay.
Yes or no? That's very important because college isn't like that. Okay, let's talk about the risk. If there's 100% of risk of COVID issues that might keep you from playing football games, and there definitely are those risks. I'm not downplaying that at all. They're a giant risk. A lot of people voting on who gets to decide about that risk because you got to hold the players back, the coaches back, all of that. Okay, let's talk about that 100% of risk. Okay, how much of the risk of getting COVID for an NFL player, Kansas City Chief next week, how much are you going to say is in his personal life just as he has today? He may choose to go work out like Tom Brady, throw the ball with others, do whatever. How much of the risk of getting COVID is that? How much of the risk is that they're at the facility practicing Monday? Well, they take off Tuesday, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, getting ready for their game each week. How much of it is that being on site together, working out and doing those things? And how much of it is actually playing football, getting tackled, breaking a huddle, and going up and for 3 hours being involved in football
face
like
to
we
face.
See it?
Yeah, with someone.
What do you guys think? I have no preconceived ideas. How you divvy it up? How dangerous is that game versus
compared
practice?
Are we talking about just COVID or all risks involved? Like getting
just COVID,
a concussion?
Just COVID, because okay. It's the only one.
I guess
that
probably you can't socially distance yourself during a game. You can do that during practice. So I would say, I guess maybe the game is a little bit more risk, especially depending on the position you're playing. If you're an offensive defensive lineman, you really are
okay,
face-to-face.
Okay, and how much do you say that compared to 5 days of other activities and 3 hours of this one? This one's more risky, maybe, and the other 5 days. So how are you divvying up to 100%? And how much of it is just his personal life?
Well, personal life, I think, is the part that is the most dangerous because that's where they tell you to have a protocol, and they can't really enforce a protocol.
Salvador Perez has COVID. Why? Yeah. Probably because of his personal life.
Yeah,
who knows?
In his particular case, I think they kind of think he might have gotten it on the plane coming back because no one in his personal life has it back there. I mean, you're like the Royals
now. What are the percentages?
Well, when we had Tommy Hotovy on, they did the contact tracing, and he thinks he got it from the grocery store.
Yeah.
You're saying you're going to give 50% to
one's
personal
life? I would say personal
life
is a bigger part.
40%?
For college kids, I think that the personal life part's got to be huge.
Yeah.
I haven't even asked that question yet, but even for the pros.
Maybe 40%.
Okay, so if the Chiefs do not show up, they still have the 40% of the full risk that they are taking on living their life.
And each one of the people is a different thing, too.
Yeah, but I'm saying as a group, because we're making group decisions.
Oh, that's
are the NFL going to play?
Part of this whole thing.
Okay, how are you going to divvy up the rest of the 60%? Game a little bit more?
I think probably a little bit more.
Well,
for certain positions.
I mean, I guess the factors that you have there is the frequency of contact. So if practice 5 days a week, the frequency of breathing on another person is a lot higher.
Well, they don't hit each other in practice anymore, right?
Yeah, that's true. But they're face-to-face, exerting each other, especially
And they're working out the whole time.
Yeah, and they're working
out
together.
Offense is working the whole time, defense. In a real game, they can socially distance on the sideline. They're only playing half the time.
Now, the difference, though, is that you're with the same group of guys every single day, 5 days. Now, all of a sudden, you're bringing an entirely different group of humans together. And I know that's what the epidemiologist says is one of the things that causes things to spread.
So they're near equal in our
analysis. The theory is this.
I can't possibly.
If you have tested, and if here's the thing that pro sports are going to have that we don't have in our normal lives. They're going to get tested more than people get tested. And the theory is, if all you have is negative tests out there, then the danger is minimal of anything.
Well, except for the personal life, changes that dynamic every day.
But they get tested nearly every day. So someone can slip through the cracks. But, I mean, they're getting tested.
So you're making a case for them supposedly playing. Okay, let's get to my point here.
That's my
point. Now we go to college. Okay? It's not light switch on, light switch off for college. Okay? They are back working out right now. They go to the stadiums and have great protocol. I'm not at all cutting down the protocol. But their personal life is still there, and I would argue having them go back to campus and not being married and having money and living apart with only 53 guys, going back to campus is even a bigger accumulation group risk than the NFL players and their personal lives, even though Tom Brady may be working out with some guys. The college guys are doing the same thing. The quarterbacks are getting out and say, hey, let's throw. Coaches say we can't. Yes, we can. Let's sneak over here to this park. It's happening. They want to be good, right? They're practicing. So there's a risk that they're already on campus. Okay? That risk.
Yep.
The personal risk they have. Then if they start going to the facility and working out / practice versus game. My new thought this week is, I would say that so much of the risk is already there and has been taken. Why would you ever not take the last risk and go to the game. Because everyone's talking about all the money. Hey, if you don't have football, how big a deal it is for other sports, for colleges, for coaches, all this kind of stuff. It's important. And then you start comparing it to the risk of COVID. Well, I'm busting down the risk of COVID. And the last risk, playing the game, is the only risk that should be considered. Because if they call off football, let's just say they say no football till the spring, are they going to tell the kids to go home? Are they going to tell the student athletes to go home? Or are they going to tell them to show up every day and do other workouts? If you're forcing those kids to go do other workouts every day,
they're voluntary, Stan.
not when you get in school.
All right, when school starts.
If they are in town together and they're forced to go to the facility,
might as well play the game.
Why wouldn't you play the game? Think about the new risk.
Right.
The incremental risk. Why aren't we talking about the incremental risk? Now, if college football, like the NFL, if the Big Ten tomorrow says we're not going to play till the spring, or everybody says it, I'm not going to criticize that if that's their safety zone. Oh, but I'll criticize it if they don't tell the players, go home. Go home to your parents. Do not come to this facility and do not hang out in this community. Because both of those are the massive amount of risk of them
compared
giving COVID-19 compared to them the game.
Yeah.
So to me, I'm more aggressively saying let's play than I ever have before unless they send the kids home. And they say no college. Don't come to college. That's the way we're going to avoid this risk. I'm cool with that.
Well, Mark Emmert put out a statement, the NCAA, with a return to sport guidelines, and he said, quote, "This document lays out the advice of healthcare professionals as to how to resume college sports if we can achieve an environment where COVID-19 rates are manageable. Today, sadly, that data points in the wrong direction. If there is to be a college sports in the fall, we need to get a much better handle on the pandemic." And I think he means we, like, as a country right now, which is a different kettle of fish altogether. We'll take a break. We'll talk more about this right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. We have Stan Weber in studio, and we're talking about the possibility of getting back to fall sports or to college athletics, because remember they canceled college athletics in the spring. They did do that. And so they're trying to talk about whether or not they should play in the fall. So Stan, I think I'm going to get Stan wound up on this. I was texting with a former Division I athletics administrator, a former associate AD, just kind of like, "Hey, what do you think about all this? What are your thoughts?" And I'm just going to read this text to you. Quote, this is somebody that used to work in the NCAA that's retired now. "I don't see how you can tell fans it's not safe and then send college kids onto the field. Feels to me like the Christians and the Lions in the Roman Coliseum. I think they should try to play golf, tennis, maybe swimming, the sports you can do safely." What is your reaction to those comments?
Well, I think that I've been pessimistic that they're going to be able to get football off with what's going on in the world. Again, I don't have a big problem with that because I'm no doctor. I'm not here on a soapbox jumping up and down and saying you got to play football no matter what or anything like that. That's not my statement. My statement is the incremental decision to go ahead and play the games versus what the alternative is. And that's all you have as a decision maker in business. I tell you, you don't worry about what happened yesterday. You say, deciding today, what can we do? So you're going to have kids on campus, football players on campus, and going to the facility, and maybe practicing even, or at least at the facility doing a lot of things, or you're going to add that they get to play a game. That's the only incremental decision.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what came across my mind a couple days ago.
Yeah.
I go, wait a second. The incremental decision makes it more easy for me that we've already taken most of the risks. Now, if you're going to tell me all the kids need to go back home, I think the biggest risk is college.
I don't
think it's football at all. I think it's when the students come back.
Most of the colleges don't want the kids to go home. I mean, I'm talking about Gen Pop students, right? Most all of the schools at this point, if they're having on campus classes, they're organizing their schedule to where there won't be a semester break in the middle, and they don't want them to go home for Labor Day. And most of them, after Thanksgiving, are saying stay home. The last 10 days of the semester are going to be online. You'll take your finals online, because they, at this point, what they're deciding is they don't want people to go home. And then
they don't want last spring all
bring
over.
In whatever.
Oh, yeah, Thanksgiving break.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll hang out with all your old high school buddies and mix those germs around and then bring them back to campus.
They'd much rather have you just stay on campus. So I agree with your point, Stan. If you're going to come here and have practice and do all those things,
You might as well play the games.
Now, the difficult part is that's when they're like, well, we want to have fans at our games. It's not going to be the same without the fans. They need to keep their eyes on the prize. And the prize is playing the game. And The prize isn't a tailgate
because the TV
game.
Revenue is big.
That's
but even
everything.
For the kids, if you
and their eligibility,
Jake and I playing in our stupid over 30, nobody comes to watch us play. We play because we love to play.
It's
the
supposed
games.
To be student athletes
yeah.
anyway.
Yeah,
you know, the tennis players play before no fans
yeah.
or three
yeah.
parents.
They play
or whatever.
Because they love the game,
and
that's
the
what,
reason they need to play the football games. Is they can't have tennis without football.
Right,
it just doesn't exist.
Right,
they cannot pay the tennis coach. They can't buy the tennis equipment. They can't make it. You know, have the bus trips. For the, you know, whatever tennis has not full scholarship, but they can't have those things without having football. So the prize should be find a way to play the games. Forget about how many people are going to be in your stadium. Forget yeah. about all those things. Find a way to play the games. That should be the prize.
Someone that needs to step up with some aggressive guts, like the SEC, and just say, the Big Ten can do what they want. The Pac-12 can do what they want. We're going to play. And I don't care if you can only bring up 40 players out of your 120, and everyone's a walk-on because all your good players got sick or aren't available. I don't care. The game's going to play. And then you look at the safety protocols that will be taken. Then see, if the players knew they were going to play today, they would act safer.
Well, you'd hope
right
so.
Right now, they're in limbo. They're like, I don't know
if
they're playing
or not. I have a different standard for the pros and the college guys, okay? Because the pro, if you're out and you're doing something stupid, which many of the pro players have done, right? If you're doing something stupid and you contract this, you know the result is they won't allow you to play. You know that. They've told you that. You can't be positive and go be in the bubble or at the facility or whatever. The college people are 18, 19, 20, 21 years old. It's a different thing for them. I get that.
Oh, I've been saying that forever.
It's not your
The risk is when all
job.
The students come back. I'm telling mm-hmm. you. When you bring 20 to 30 to 50,000 students
and
together.
I understand if you're 19-year-old college kid and you want to go to a party, even though you know you shouldn't, your chances of you doing something dumb are greater because it's just part of your life. It's not your job. If you're a pro athlete, you're 25 years old, you've got a big contract, and you can't help yourself, then you deserve whatever bad things happen with your money, your sickness, all this stuff. Listen, we're all doing different things.
Let me talk about OU.
We're living life the way we never lived before because we know we have to do it to...
Let me throw out another thing that about OU, because you love talking about Oklahoma. We always circle it in like we talk about soccer with Nate. Oklahoma's a smart one. They're talking about moving their game up early, a week early. Why isn't everyone – the Big Ten, why they said they want to play less games is so they have more weeks to be able to cancel a game and find a way to play it later.
Give yourself some wiggle room.
Okay, right. Yeah. How else you get wiggle room? Start the season earlier. Don't wait till September 5th. Start August 29th. Start August 22nd. Let's roll. Oklahoma should have a game on August 22nd. If it gets canceled, there's plenty of room. Let's start planning of how to play all 12 games, and let's start playing earlier, I think. And Oklahoma's already done that. They're saying, why play September 5th? Can we please play a week earlier? The week zero, they
out.
Call it.
Yeah,
I think
that's
smart. Spread them out.
We'll see.
It is going to be interesting to see what happens. This is all happening in the midst of the numbers continuing to grow in the United States, and that makes it a more difficult challenge. We'll take a break more with Stan Weber in studio right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. We have Todd Lebo and Stan Weber in studio practicing their social distancing 6 feet apart. We've got a glass partition here in between us as well. Let's transition to some NFL talk, guys, because there's a lot to talk about in the NFL as well. But I want to start. Let's talk some good news. Let's talk some. We get all the bad news a lot of times. Let's talk some good news. And Stan, news that hey, I will put my hand up and admit when I'm wrong about something, and especially when I'm happy to be wrong about something. I was always less optimistic that the Chiefs could work out a contract extension with Chris Jones. I thought they were going to try to trade him before the draft happened, and I didn't really see how they could fit all the pieces together and pay both Frank Clark and Chris Jones on the same defensive line, and so I was always a bit of a skeptic. You were right. You said they could work something out, and they would, and they did. So the floor is yours on this. What do you think of the fact that they were able to work all of this out and get Chris Jones on board with a 4-year contract?
It's very good work, and it should not be discounted. Even if you can take an optimistic attitude or approach like I did right when he got tagged or even before when we knew he was going to get tagged, the basic statement then was there's no way they can afford him. They can't have a $16 million hit on the salary cap for him to play, so they're going to trade him. That, you know, up to the draft, all those thoughts are that was the the majority opinion, I think, is, and I said, well, they're going to have to take care of Patrick Mahomes sometime, and that's the most important thing. But we talked about how the Chiefs can pull off something that's so unique. They have so much equity with their players. Now, usually that doesn't matter. Money is usually the only thing that matters. The agent gets involved. The player says, this is my life. I don't care about the long-term benefit of the Chiefs. But they have so much equity, and they can be so truthful. And I had promoted right from the beginning, you go to Chris Jones, say, we'd love to have you as a player. We'd love to sign you to a long-term contract, but Patrick Mahomes has to come first. I don't know how much of the salary cap that's going to leave. But one of the big keys is they used that equity and said, let's don't get mad at each other. Let's find a way to make it work until it doesn't work. Then the next big thing was Patrick Mahomes was always going to be different than almost anybody but a Tom Brady in the world. I never doubted that Patrick Mahomes is going to look out for the long-term best interest of the Kansas City Chiefs football team. It does not mean that he's not going to make a ton of money. He's going to make a ton of money. But we talked about, remember when we guessed how much money he made off the field? That isn't only on the field money. We said, I guess $20 million. Steven looked it up and said they guessed $23 million. Some magazine did. He's going to make a lot of money. He wants to win. He knows that the salary cap can't be used up only by himself. He was always going to structure a contract that would give the Chiefs a chance to function well. And his contract is perfectly set up. All those roster bonuses he's going to have are going to turn into regular bonuses to be amortized. He's going to get renegotiated many, many times over and get tons of money. Then you go to Chris Jones and say, hey, Chris, we can possibly work you in as well. Even last week I was telling you on the air how if you think he's worth $20 million, you can get him $20 million. But let's just override one statement I want to make. The best chance for a dominant organization like the Chiefs, dominant right now in football, to continue to lengthen that period of time that they're on top of the world is to not allow $1 of salary cap room to not be spent. Don't allow $1. Because the owners are trying to make money, so you'd like to keep, if you could make an extra $10 million under the cap, the owner makes $10 million more dollars. You see that? That motivation's there. But if you want to be great, the owner is well worth, he wants to pay the money. He's getting capped out by the NFL. So what you want to do is use every dollar. And I said all along, with Chris Jones, he had a $16 million cap hit if he's a franchise player. They could change that into a bonus. I talked to you last week about how they could pay him money right now, like $20 million and those kind of things, and make promises in the future that if we trade you, you'll get paid a lot of money and things like that to hit the cap number. I thought they needed room for Patrick Mahomes. But guess what Patrick Mahomes did? He said, I'll have a super low number. So they've hit with a big number on Chris Jones the next 2 years. They're doing this perfectly. It could be pay me now, pay me later. You can do both. Chris Jones did not get paid a bonus, fans. He did not get a $37 million bonus, because a bonus is amortized over the length of the contract. Usually that's good, right? Usually, right. Hey, we're pushing it down the road. Yeah. But what do the Chiefs want to do? Remember, don't waste any room. Use it all. They want him to be a salary cap hit early. So yeah. They paid him $37 million, but it wasn't a bonus, guys. Yeah. It was guaranteed salary.
Yeah.
So if they trade him after this year, if they can only afford him this year, and they trade him next year, then it's guaranteed salary that they've paid him.
They don't take a big hit because of the bonus being spread out if they do that.
In year three, there is no amortization of that bonus. You see, they're matching these things up. They're doing it so smart. But
it's a game of Tetris is really what it is.
What the Chiefs have done, and this makes them so dangerous. Now, there's no guarantee you're going to win the Super Bowl. Ball bounces funny, lose a game, whatever. They have so much trust right now between their players and their organization. It's insane. Sammy Watkins signed a deal a couple years ago, and he's like, I got enough money. I'm okay. I'll take a little bit of a cap hit. Take my money down. I'm happy to be here. They took a chance on Tyreek Hill when they drafted him. They took a chance on signing him to – they stood by him last offseason and signed him to a deal when they had they didn't have to. They didn't have to do that, right? They took a chance and signed a 12-year deal with their quarterback. Chris Jones sees all these things going, and he wants to be a part of this. This was not the case a few years ago. They didn't have this love fest. Now, maybe winning the Super Bowl does this. But
does not happen at most cities. It just does not happen.
While the Dallas Cowboys can't sign their quarterback at the same time, while the Tampa Bay Buccaneers can't even decide what position their franchise player plays They're fighting about what position he plays on, how much money they're going to tag him with. While all these things are happening in the league, Patrick Mahomes is like, no, no, no. Let's make sure these guys get paid. Chris Jones is like, I want to be a part of this. And they're doing these things, and it makes them so super dangerous because they have all these talented players who love the boss. Normally, well, it's this
just
confrontational
money. And
thing.
Sammy Watkins is the best example that he truly said, rather than go to the market and get my money because I got my Super Bowl, he said, I'll play for this amount.
Because he's been through a lot of stuff in his life, right? And he got here, he got comfortable. And now he's had his weird moments. That story in the Bleacher Report or the Ringer was amazing, and him sitting there on the beach talking his story. But he likes, like Andy Reid, and he likes being with Patrick Mahomes, and he certainly liked winning the Super Bowl, and he was the top five pick or whatever. So he's got all kinds of money, but he likes what his life is like right here. And there's something to be said, and we say this all the time: the grass is not always greener. Da 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 da. Right. The grass is really green right now in Kansas City, and these guys are all happy, and there's enough money in the National Football League to go around. And there's going to be some hard decisions made in the next few years. Some guys will get cut, okay? I firmly believe that whatever the year is, 2023, there's only four guys who are signed right now.
It's like For the Chiefs.
Something like that, four or five guys.
That they're committed for that year.
Because I believe that in 2023 or 2024, Patrick Mahomes is going to throw a touchdown pass to someone who's never even caught a college pass. It's going to happen because that's football, right? Nobody thought 3 years ago Mecole Hardman was going to be a part of this team. He was just this kid on campus somewhere. There are guys right now getting ready to maybe play college football this year. Maybe not. Who knows what's going to happen there? Who will be catching passes for the Chiefs well before Patrick Mahomes' contract is over. And while many of these players aren't on the team, but they got their guy and they got some other guys who are big-time players. But it's just going to go turning over and over and over.
To summarize the uniqueness of what I said many, many months ago, Jake was on board of saying that they could get Chris Jones signed and wants him to. So he definitely is. There are others, no doubt about it. But the thing I kept saying is I was idealistic enough that they could use this concept and actually get along with the player and say, stick with me, Chris. It's going to be a long ride.
Trust is hard to get in this business.
And you shouldn't trust those organizations. They'll cut your ass in a second. You know what I mean? This is built up over a long time. Yeah. We're not acting like these are perfect owners and the players are finally getting it.
Right now, there's a lot of trust.
But there's a lot of trust. And I think Brett Veach has done a very good job of being very honest with those players. And it may not work. I didn't guarantee it was going to work or anything like that. I said, I'd be so honest with Chris. We'd love to have you play if we can fit you in, but we're going to have to see what goes with Patrick Mahomes first and where we are. But stick with us, man. And that's exactly what he did. He stuck with them. He bent a little bit. They gave him a ton of money up front, which is really cool. But it's a great contract for the Chiefs. It's a great contract for Chris Jones. He may not be a Chief very long. You know, he might be here only 2 years or three, those kind of things. But they've done what they needed to. And the Chiefs really did use the equity that they've gotten, mainly from Andy Reid, and then also from general manager Brett Veach. Those players trust him, and that is so unheard of in sports, in big-time sports.
And Andy Reid is the guy that sets the culture and the tone for the Kansas City Chiefs. There's no doubt about it. I mean, Brett Veach is great, and he's doing an amazing job, but he was put in place by Andy Reid for a reason, because he fits the culture that Andy Reid wants to have in his organization. And I'm glad. One of the reasons, I mean, mostly for Kansas City, I was glad, but I was glad to see Andy Reid win a Super Bowl, because I like seeing that approach be proven to be able to win.
Good guys can win.
Because I think there's been this idea in the NFL that you got to do it the Bill Belichick way, which is these are faceless guys, and I don't want to have a personal relationship with any of them. I'll get rid of any of them in a heartbeat, and they are not to express themselves or show any individuality or anything, because this is the way we do things. And obviously he has proven that his system can work and you can win a lot. But I think a lot of people then thought, this is how I've got to operate if I want to win. And Andy Reid is different. He has a different approach, and he says, I want my players to express themselves. I want my players to be individuals. I want them to show themselves having fun and enjoying the process. As long as they do all the things that we're supposed to do to get there, I want them to be able to enjoy it. And I want to have a personal relationship with these guys. And I wanted to see that approach win so that people can look at it and go, yeah, you can win this way. And then you can retain some of your players. But people should also remember this. Because, like you said, they'll cut your ass in a minute. If you look at the approach, alert, sound the alert. Peter Vermees studied Andy Reid and what he did with the Philadelphia Eagles when he started running a Major League Soccer franchise. He said everybody else is looking at soccer GMs around the world. They don't have a salary cap. We have a salary cap in MLS, and I want to see the teams that can win on a year-in, year-out basis in a league that has a salary cap. So he studied what Andy Reid did, and one of the things he saw was Andy Reid was not keeping guys around after they turned 30. He was letting guys, once they turn 30, they're on the backside of their career, and he moves on from those guys, and it makes people around him mad. Chris Jones is 25. And that's one of the things that I probably should have factored in a lot more when I was making my prediction that they probably aren't going to be able to hold on to him. He is not close to that that threshold. And that, what you said, Todd, is going to come at some point, right, with Andy Reid. They will let some guys that we love go at some point in time. That's just part of how you have to operate in the NFL. At some point, that's going to happen, right?
Yes. And to be fair, it's not like you missed anything. The salary cap, the dollars were going to be hard. It's not about age and things like that as much. But I'll say this, if you're a 20-year-old or a 15-year-old and you don't want to be a great athlete, most want to, hey, I want to be LeBron James or whatever, Patrick Mahomes. Some of them actually do say, I want to be a broadcaster. Some of them, like a young Nate Bucati. Or some of them say,
I was told in no uncertain terms by my dad that I'll never be a professional athlete.
But some people want to be a coach.
Yeah,
so,
right.
Okay,
right.
And let's be realistic about this. If you were to say that you're going to be a very successful coach, and if you're an NFL coach, a head coach, you're super successful, The chances of you being successful and being a hard ass and a Bill Belichick type is much greater than kind of the nice guy. Okay, I'm a rooting like you for the nice guys, and I think they can win. But the fact is, a cold blooded hard ass is more likely to end up being a great coach. Okay, than the guys who are like Andy Reid. So every time a guy like Andy Reid busts through and competes with them at the highest level and is as good as them or better, you just have to do backflips because. I hope if you're making a choice and you're a 15 or 20-year-old, you'll choose to be a good guy and be the Andy Reid, the kind of anomaly. But even if you don't, you can still be a super success and make people's lives better, not cut quarters. Do you really want to be Bill Belichick and cheat? I mean, is it really? Do you really want to be that guy to just lose all reference to what right and wrong is? Because football is the most important thing, and winning in the NFL is the most important thing. So who cares if we cut some rules, cut some players? You know, hey, will you take that shot of steroids? We need you to weigh 10 more pounds. That's what's happened over the last 40 years. Coaches kind of wink, wink. They don't care about anybody. How about Andy Reid caring? And I'll, you know, you bring up your soccer alert. I'll give you my Bruce Weber alert.
There you
okay?
go.
Because I root for Bruce Weber to win. Because in a world where they say nobody does it the right way. Oh, you college basketball is so dirty. I mean, no one does it the right way. Well, I know one person who does do it the right way. And when he can compete at the highest level and beat those guys, win a Big 12 championship, it's like Andy Reid. It's like, you know, wow, how does this happen that a guy this good a human being, the odds are not likely that they're going to make it to the top because there's some kind of cold-bloodedness deep in you that makes a difference. So I'm with you. Let's celebrate Andy Reid's goodness as a person, a coach.
Stan, let's talk about the football part of Chris Jones. There's been a lot of, you know, the stat nerd guys out there saying that, you know, the Chiefs in some of these analytics things aren't as good when he's on the field and different things like that. When I watch with my eyeball test, I think Chris Jones makes plays, okay? And I think his personality and what he's meant to this team when I get to see them in the locker room and the fact that he's around these guys and they all kind of get together is important as well. When you watch him play, is this a good contract to have him on this team?
I think so. I mean, you can substitute around what he does and still be very successful. I mean, the fact is that defensive linemen, for instance, don't play but half the time. You usually rotate four defensive tackles in. No one's able to play the whole game. So by definition, he's playing half of the defensive plays. I would look at him as a guy who is a giant disruptor, mm-hmm. a game winner. And a lot of the game winning comes into energy, emotion, focus, desire. And if it's a regular season game, sometimes, you know, guys who are into biorhythms and stuff like that would say certain days you're just on. Chris Jones is not a bad person. He doesn't show up at work not trying. But if it's his biorhythms or whatever, there are certain days where he is just locked in and everything is easy. And so he's going to blow things up and win a game or two like that. But what I really like about it is when it becomes a playoffs, it's very unlikely that he's not going to be locked in and ready to roll.
Your biorhythms are clicking when the playoffs are going
on. You know, something about you and you have super, super, super focus. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Is that the defensive tackles play after play can mesh together and not be that different. Uh-huh. So I would almost say, I could say like he's a home run hitter. Like he can not just hit for whatever the average everyone else is, but he'll just blast some home runs. But that's not fair because there are not very many home run hitters who are reliable to say, okay, today I'm going to hit home runs.
Maybe he's going to hit home runs in the playoffs.
Yeah, maybe Reggie Jackson is the only guy I can think of that you could just count on it.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's still a little bit too random with home runs, so I don't want to say it. I'm going to say in football, when Chris Jones is completely locked in, and I'm not bad-mouthing him. You know, some people say he's taking plays off. Some people say he's rushing the quarterback and not worrying about the run. Hey, I was saying that earlier, not about money, but I think he's a guy who's going to the quarterback. Not when the Chiefs' run defense stunk 2 years ago, I thought Chris Jones was a part of it.
Yep.
He wasn't locking his lineman up
or
two.
People in the organization thought he was a part of it.
He was going to the quarterback. You get paid by getting to the quarterback. You disrupt. But now the Chiefs' defense is with Tyrann Mathieu there. It covers up a lot of things, the linebackers, etc. So Chris Jones can be more of a disruptor. But to answer your question, down after down during the season, I can follow those analytics and say Chris Jones is not that much different than the other guys that are rolling through there. But when he explodes and that play happens, it's like no one else hardly in the NFL. Because even Aaron Donald, they brag about him. Go watch the tape of Aaron Donald. He gets blocked a lot. Okay? But Chris Jones is longer. And when you're a quarterback, it's not just him being there. Here comes Aaron Donald coming toward you. Oh, crap, he's fast, or he's driving my guard back into my space. All those things matter. But Chris Jones' arms, when he raises that arm up, I mean, it goes to the sky. And he knocked, what was the biggest play he made? Knocking down a pass that would have been a completion for the Niners, which would have probably kept the Niners on board to go win the game.
Right.
But when he rushes up the middle, he not only moves the guard back fast and can overpower him. When he starts raising his hands up, he covers a large area. So I just think he'll show up at the playoffs. And that's when you have an elite player. I'm not going to be down on him on the fourth week of the season if he has no tackles.
Hey, the question always is when you get this money, right? The guy made $6 million in 4 years. He's going to make more money, you know, if they play regular football by the middle of the season than he's made in his whole career, right? And
but he's already got $38 million in his pocket.
Once you get paid like this, you get paid, you get this money, do you still have that desire to go do it? The great ones do. And I think he will be a guy who still fights for it. Because, you know, I think he's got that attitude. He wants to be great. He loves this team, and he'll do that. I know we've seen plenty of times after someone gets paid, that's when you get hurt and maybe you're out for a bit. I don't.
He seems
see
like the kind
him.
Of guy that likes the job.
But how many guys get paid on a championship team like this?
Yeah,
like usually when guys get paid, they go leave and they go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Culture, you
go to
the
7-9 team,
right? The culture and the structure,
and you know they aren't going to win. So you're like, what the heck?
Right?
So I got my money.
They get paid, but they go somewhere else where the team's They're not staying with the
These guys are held accountable in this.
Well, this is the Patrick Mahomes factor.
This culture. Mm-hmm. This culture
you got Frank Clark and Tyrann Mathieu on your defense.
It's
going
to be
really
hard to get paid and then slack.
And Patrick Mahomes, too. I mean, when you walk out and you're playing the Cleveland Browns in Week 7, everyone's going to do their thing. You know, they're going to do their thing. They're going to do their job. And Chris Jones will just be out there. But I'm telling you what, if it's Week 1 of the playoffs and you're leaving the locker room and getting ready to go down to get introduced down that ramp, Patrick Mahomes is going to be coming over to Chris Jones and going, your time, buddy.
Yeah.
Your time. Show me. Get me that ball. He will do that. He ain't going to say to every 53 players, but he'll go talk to a few who can elevate their game to a whole other level. And that's what Patrick Mahomes will do, is he'll say, let's go. It's on me. Let's get it done. And he'll walk over to Chris Jones while they're bundled up and waiting to go out there. And he'll get in his face and say, it's your time, baby.
Hey,
let's go.
You know, the question about that, though, is really one thing. The one thing we don't know about this entire team is how they're going to respond to being champs. Has anybody on that team? Frank Clark didn't win a Super Bowl with Seattle, so these guys are all.
Suggs is the only one, right?
Yeah,
he's not around.
Yeah, I mean, so these guys are all going to be carrying around the biggest ring they've ever worn in their lives for the first time, and the answer is probably different for every individual how they handle that. Do they still have that fire lit underneath them? Do they still want to go chase greatness and all those things? And that is the one thing that we don't know, how each guy on this team is going to respond to that. It's not just about the money.
It's an unprecedented time too, because they didn't all get to go around all summer and get told how awesome they were and go do all these things because they've been shut down. It's like normally you're on the, you know, the rubber chicken banquet circuit all summer long.
Sunday, every night at 10:30, you see them on a show.
No, they had a couple weeks of that, you know, right after the bowl.
World Games.
And then everything's just like, so they haven't really been able to be told to go do this stuff. And you know what?
And they
played more games than anyone else, and they had a virtual OTA. They didn't have to, you know, sort of half-ass practice it is. They didn't have those.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll be able to compare this to anything that's happened before, because it's the most unprecedented offseason ever.
It's not like their focus is going to keep them from winning the Super Bowl. It's just random somewhat when you get down. It's hard to win. But I think it's easier for them. Think about a goal. If you've seen someone else do it, it's easier, like your kids, when you want them to take the next step. If they've seen one of their buddies do it, I think it's more likely for your friend to be able to say, I can do that. And if there's a little competitiveness that you could put there, and the New England Patriots, fortunately, weren't a dynasty 10 years ago.
Right.
These players played against the New England Patriots. They understand that in the NFL, if you focus, you can actually win two Super Bowls in a row. You can be a dominant team for 5 years. And, oh, by the way, there's a little bit of a competitiveness with the Patriots. That overtime game, they were on the same field, or the Chiefs would have won two Super Bowls in a row already, possibly. So I think it's great that they can look at New England and go, why can't we, if we focus and do the same things and replicate that, why can't we win multiple Super Bowls? And, oh, by the way, do you want to say that we're better or the Patriots? You want to talk about the last 5 year Patriots or the next 5 year Chiefs? It's easy for Andy Reid to put that carrot out there. And I think the psychology of the human being, this makes it more real, more achievable, and more focused. Like, if you don't do it, you're second rate because the Patriots are better than you. You got to pass what they just did.
Yeah, it set the bar.
The Roger Bannister, the first man to break the 4-minute mile, you know?
Yeah.
Nobody had done it until Roger Bannister did it, and then a year later, three people do it in the exact same race.
Yeah.
It's like once somebody breaks that down and the possibility is there, then
that barrier doesn't exist anymore.
It's limitless.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I think about when you're kids, I'm not promoting this, but did you ever like have a little bike ramp and jump? I used to do that. Yeah, you know,
hey, like rat racing, man.
You know, you jump and you go, look, he went 3 feet. Woo, he went 4 feet. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, here comes a neighbor kid who hadn't been with the boys. Mm-hmm. Here comes Jake. Hey, Jake, come over here, try this. And Jake just rides up, okay, foot. And he goes 10 feet.
Yeah.
Way further than the others. And they're like, 3 seconds later, everybody's going 10 feet. Have you ever seen that?
Oh,
when you're playing games?
Yep.
It's amazing when you open your mind up that you can do it. How easy it is to do it.
That's right. That's right.
This isn't going to be easy, but I think the Patriots are really going to help.
That's a great point.
The Chiefs say, you don't think it can happen, and you don't think you better make it happen if you want to be compared to them? Get going.
And you got the two key ingredients. You got a Hall of Fame coach and a Hall of Fame quarterback, you know, who's willing to do things to help, you know, keep other players on the roster. So the building blocks are there. One of the other things that's going to be interesting, though, is how different teams approach this situation going into this uncertain time. Can you keep the focus not fully sure that a season's going to be there? We're going to talk about that. Also want to talk with Stan about the Dak Prescott situation because we haven't done that yet. That's right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. There's the Doobie Brothers Jake was looking for. Look at that smile on his face now.
Don't expose him that he was looking for it before. No one knew that.
Well,
no,
it's all good.
Trust me. If I'm to be exposed, Nate will do it.
Hey.
I mean, he told us off the air that this new board, you got a new board, right?
Yeah, a new software system.
A new software system, and he pushed a button, and it didn't respond appropriately.
Right.
No big deal. Played another great song, but he told us he wanted to get the Doobie Brothers because it didn't fire. So, no problem. We'll take that information
and go
home.
We've got wide orbit going now.
Yeah. And now,
the glitch.
I wasn't trying to throw him under the bus.
He throws him right underneath the bus.
Jake wanted to play this earlier, but he couldn't.
I was just pointing out how happy
Todd's
you are
Todd's wife
now.
Said this about him last night.
What?
Why were you Todd's wife last night?
Hey, listen.
Well, Todd told us off the air, like, hey, I was doing it with this. And suddenly Nate's like, hey, did you hear about Todd's wife and his discussion?
Just listen to the music.
You know, to go back
was
to
that
the...
Was that you fire at Jake on purpose? Like, just
no,
an undercut?
No, I really wasn't. I usually try to protect
you. He
does
it without even thinking about it.
Yeah, that's even. That's worse.
What he has to do right now is just call for a drop that says isn't there. That would be
Nate's
the best.
Intention. Nate's intention is always good.
But
his execution isn't always good.
No, my execution is oftentimes. Yeah.
The punch below the belt was an accident.
I was not trying to call out a mistake. I didn't think it was a mistake. It was that, hey, you got a new system in there.
People know that Wide Orbit is here.
You were frustrated that you didn't get to hear the song you wanted, and now you got to hear it, but you're so happy
now.
Well,
we got to hear Sundown by Gordon Lightfoot. There you go. It's all the hits.
That's always,
I'm saying
that's
it's awesome. To the listener, it's just beauty.
No, when Stan Weber's here, it's super hits of the 70s. That's what we got.
Is that right?
Oh, that's what we're doing.
Hey.
Why do I like these songs so much? So everyone out there hates these songs?
No, we love them.
Hey, our headphones are better than your stereo, you know, your AM radio doesn't sound as good as my headphones
here
either.
But if you're listening online, though.
Oh, listening on the app.
Oh, wow.
I will say something about Todd Lebo's wife.
What?
Whoa.
I will say something about Todd Lebo's wife. Because, did you know today is Barb and Gary Lebo's 55th wedding anniversary?
My parents.
How about that?
And we can't call her Barbie. It's Barbara.
Barb, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Like
Barbara.
At all.
I apologize.
That's what I'm going to make my mom mad.
Man,
say, hello, Barb.
I'm stepping in it all over the place today. So I asked you about what was something you learned in the 55 years about your parents. I have a role model right here in the form of Todd Lebo, and I'll never forget this moment. We were in New Orleans. I was not working at this radio station at the time. It was 2003, and KU was playing in the Final Four.
Did they win that
down
one?
There. They lost to Seren Petro's Syracuse team.
Carmella.
And we were somewhere on Bourbon Street, a bunch of broadcasters, a bunch of media members that were all
this
down in
New
Orleans.
This is where he's teaching you some good stuff on Bourbon Street?
And there was some, I'm not naming any names, but there were some guys that were making comments about the old lady back home and the old, you know, the wife this and the wife that. And it was, you know how that gets going. And I was a single guy at the time. I had not met my wife. And Todd Lebo, somebody said, what about you, Todd? And he goes, nope. I love my wife with all my heart. I mean, you won't catch me saying anything bad about her. And it was genuine. And I said right there, I said, I'm not marrying somebody until I feel that way that Todd Lebo feels about his wife. And that is a true story. And so Todd Lebo is a role model for me.
Todd Lebo is the Andy Reid of the sports broadcasting group.
Good human being.
Great human being.
That's how I roll.
And he gets along with the people who are on other stations as well. You were on a competing
station. That's right.
And he treats you with complete respect.
He did.
Hey, we're all together in Bourbon Street. There were no competing stations. You're down there for like 7 days at the Final Four.
Hopefully, he didn't say right after that. And don't tell my wife what we're going into right now.
We were just hanging out at a bar. That's all we were doing.
Jake knows about that. You know what Bourbon Street means.
We're not telling Jake stories on Bourbon Street right now.
I'm not throwing Jake under the bus now.
Jake's not married yet.
So, all right, Dak Prescott, what do you think of the way that whole situation played out with your Cowboys?
The Cowboys don't handle the cap very well, so they've got some issues there. It's weird because I think the ownership, Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones, I really think they like Dak Prescott, and I think that they believe in him a decent amount. I don't think they believe in him as much as they did Tony Romo. I mean, he loved Tony Romo and would give him money. So they don't love Dak to the level of Tony Romo, or they don't believe in Dak's going to win the Super Bowl.
It's kind of misguided to love Tony Romo that much, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, Tony Romo...
wasn't his fault they lost.
I like Tony
games,
Romo, but he is a tease. And he gets, like, and it's a golf game. If you watch him, he plays golf at a high, high level. But where he messes up is that, you know, 6 foot putt barely misses. So when he has to hold the ball for Martin Gramatica for a short field goal at Seattle, the ball slips through his hands. I mean, just crazy stuff happens. And so Dak Prescott has handled himself as a great human being and a great leader on the football team. You talk about a guy who's a fourth round pick and then got thrown into being a starting quarterback because Tony Romo got hurt in a preseason game against Seattle.
He forced Tony Romo into retirement because he performed well.
Right, and he just went out and went, a playoff team, won the division and all that, 13-3 or something the first year. So Dak Prescott's played at a high level. He's taken hits. He's a rare human being that I think, with his mother passing away when she did and all this, he's a guy who can separate the money from the football. He's a dedicated player. Do you realize Dallas is a big metroplex, and when you're a Dallas Cowboy, man, you are elite of elite. You talk about you want a party or never pay for a drink or whatever.
live down where the younger people live and have some fun. Where the Cowboys work out is not close to that, right? In the Metroplex, mm-hmm. it's, 45 minutes away from... It's a hall out there. He got an apartment right next to the workout facility. It has to be a fairly simple apartment because he wanted to be able to go over there anytime and all the time. So he's handled himself perfectly. He's done a nice job. He's a good quarterback. He really is. I don't know if he can't make plays in the big moments because the Cowboys really haven't gotten there. They've been so poorly coached. Jason has done such a bad job of coaching them because Jerry won't let him coach. A long story. So Dak's just a question mark, but he's done nothing wrong. I think they like Dak, and I think Dak is a very good human being and everything else. I'm not worried about him being mad on that franchise tag stuff. I just don't think he has it in him. He knows he's a quarterback. He'll go out, he'll run the football and everything else, but I don't know how this is going to end up because last year they're 8-8, and I think Jerry Jones is saying with some skepticism, maybe he's just an 8-8 quarterback, and maybe we'll find something better someplace else, but in the end they won't. He's not Patrick Mahomes in that tier, but would you rather have Josh Allen? If you think Buffalo's anywhere near popping up, Dallas has so much more prestige, but it's a joke, right? They haven't won a Super Bowl since 95. Think of the Bills where they are. Fourth or fifth best team in the AFC, right?
Yeah, maybe
playoff
third.
Team.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Cowboys really have the same ability when you look at their lineup. Would you rather have Josh Allen or Dak Prescott?
Dak Prescott.
A million times over
yeah.
for me.
Yeah, so, not even close.
So I think he is going to last and be the Cowboys quarterback, and I think it's all going to get worked out, and it's just really, really weird that they haven't been able to
Mike McCarthy,
get the cap
work. The wild card there. You know, he won a Super Bowl in Green Bay, but can get accused of not getting as much out of Aaron Rodgers as you should have. I mean, you should have made more than one Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers. I know they didn't draft anyone in the first round. It was a skill position player, whatever. But you have that quarterback, and they have plenty of skill position people around there, and he was never able to get back to another Super Bowl with him. But I think he's a step up from Jason Garrett, right?
A step up. Well, because Jason Garrett was neutered by Jerry Jones.
Will he be allowed to do his
job?
And
Jason Garrett is a smart guy. Like, he went to Princeton, okay?
And McCarthy spent like a year outside, like in the lab. I mean, he was running these things with all these coaches.
I like that.
He just really wanted
to
get back
in the game. He appreciates it. The main thing is Jerry Jones will listen to
him. He probably had his choice, right? I mean, he didn't. There were some jobs open.
I think so. But he's a legitimate pro coach. He has an opinion. And Jerry will listen to his opinion for a year or so. When Parcells came in, the Cowboys immediately started winning because they started doing it the Parcells way. And then Jerry Jones undercut him and said, you know what? This is my team. I want to play with it. You know, yeah. Can I talk to Dez? I want to motivate Dez before the game. Dez, you got to play hard. Quit tweeting such stupid stuff. Come on, man. You can do it. We're going to win. And he goes over and hugs Tony and says, man, I love you. You know, you're Troy Aikman. Come on, let's go. He circumvents everything. And Parcells just said, hey, I'm out of here.
Can't do this. It's
Parcells just
stuff.
Said, either let me coach or not. And he quietly, professionally just waved to Jerry and said, I really like you, but you're not letting me coach anymore. Jason got in there, and he goes, he's a Troy Aikman type guy. He's a Jimmy Johnson type guy, right? He's in there going, we're going to do things right way. Boom, 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 boom. He was the offensive coordinator, and that lasted for about a year and a half.
Realized, what do you need, sir?
He's a
I'll
smart dude. Yeah. And then he's like, I can coach here a long time if I just play along with Jerry. So I want to win. I hope we'll win. But and this is Stan Weber speaking, you have no chance of winning. You lost all your discipline. You know, when they jump off sides, it's fourth and one. The Eagles are going to go for this. Big game. Hut, hut. Mm-hmm. Dude jumps off sides. And then what does Jason Garrett do?
Claps.
That's okay. That's okay. You just gave up the biggest first down of the game. That's okay. We just lost. That's okay. You know what? I'm still the coach of the Dallas Cowboys.
Stan. All right, so Stan Weber.
By the way, I would have signed up for at least 15 minutes of Stan impersonating Jerry Jones forever. For every Friday.
This has been a long-running thing for two decades with Stan Weber. He loves the Cowboys. He loves the Chiefs. All right?
Right.
Now, the Chiefs have won it. Okay?
I hate the Washington Redskins, just for all those issues.
There
I hate
go.
The Washington Redskins.
Okay.
And
easy
have,
team to hate. Easy
have.
Team to hate. You're on
so
the right side
the
of that
Chiefs
one, buddy.
They're my least favorite team in the NFL,
what you
period.
Want. The Chiefs won the Super Bowl, and they have a quarterback for the next however long who's probably going to be able to win more than one Super Bowl, whatever. Have we tipped the scales now? Are you gonna 51% be Chiefs if the Chiefs are on at the same time, whatever? The Cowboys, are they down now? Have the Chiefs gone up there yet? Because I know it's hard to change your spots.
No, can't change your spots.
Why are you putting him in this position?
I've been very truthful about this whole thing. 1971, I'm a kid growing up in Wichita.
Choice.
There are three games a week. and there was Monday Night Football. It started mm-hmm. in 1970. So four games a week. You get to watch. Every week the Chiefs were on. Every week the Cowboys were on. The Chiefs won the Super Bowl in 69 and were great in 71. It's the season they lost to the Dolphins on the warmest mm-hmm. Christmas day ever in Kansas City when Jan Stenerud missed the field goals, etc. They should have been to the Super Bowl. Okay, they're the best team. The Dallas Cowboys were up and coming, lost the Super Bowl in 70, okay, and had been fighting against Green Bay before that. They chose Roger Staubach over Craig Morton mid-71, and they took off. The two best teams in the NFL were the Dallas Cowboys and the Kansas City Chiefs. And when you grew up in Wichita, you have both teams. Now, the Packers are the biggest deal in my world with my relatives, my grandpa and people like that. I love how they run the sweep.
Blah, blah.
And, blah. And I like the computers of the Dallas Cowboys, the shifting, the fanciness. You know, that's wimp football. Packers are...
Razzle-dazzle.
Yeah, I loved the razzle-dazzle as a kid,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So I loved the Cowboys, and it was more... We all liked the Chiefs. Everybody liked the Chiefs, but it was more that fight. When I'd watch football with the older people, they'd go, oh, that Dallas, they're just fancy and talking about computers. And I go, I love the way they're doing things. So it became personal. Like, you know how when it's a... Yep. You and Jake talk about things, and it gets more emotional. You start rooting too hard. So I started rooting for the Cowboys so hard. So now it's 71, and I know, hey, I can analyze football even when I was a kid. You guys may not realize this, but I said the best teams in the NFL are the Chiefs and the Cowboys. Uh-oh, my two favorite teams are going to play in the Super Bowl.
And then it didn't happen.
And I go, wait a second. And it didn't happen, but I had already decided late in the season, God, who am I going to root for? And I go, I love Roger Staubach so much.
Mahomes is never going to eclipse Roger Staubach as a person in your world. I know that. But
Roger Staubach's my guy.
Team,
so I went 50.1 to 49.9. But now I'm a citizen of Kansas City, so right. my love and interest for the Chiefs is high. But I'm no different. I'm just as boringly the same. In 1971, what I thought about my teams, I hated the Washington Redskins in 1971. They're my least favorite team. They still are today. So I'm exactly the same. Chiefs and Cowboys are right there equal.
I want to get you to 51 Chiefs, though.
Well,
how many Super Bowls is this kid
everyone around here? Everyone yeah. around here is 99% Chiefs, so it's easy for me to as a citizen. When the Royals win, I'm doing backflips because the town's
I'm
happy.
I'm not asking about that.
Chiefs? No. I'm not going to back down from how my love of the Cowboys. It's been
constant. I don't want
constant.
You to back down. I just want you to go to 51 Chiefs.
Well, I got to stick and take the pain of the Cowboys being such a
questions.
Bad run. No, I'm saying... It's equal. It's still Cowboys 50.1,
would
Chiefs 49.9.
Would it be a realistic thing to say they're going to play in the Super Bowl sometime in the next 5 years? Or have you given up on that?
Yeah, it could happen. Because the Chiefs should make it 2 out of the 5 years, maybe.
Hey.
Cowboys wants in the next 20. Depends if he lets McCarthy coach.
Yeah.
If McCarthy
it's not
coaches.
Happen, is it?
Everybody
what's
going to
be cool is
the Cowboys
might be
team.
1 year and the Chiefs might be the next.
Well, then it'd be good for you.
No, I know sports are so cold-blooded that I don't get caught up in, hey, Michael Irvin's a jerk. To me, he's number 88. I don't care about what he does, you know, everywhere else. I care about what he does on the field. So I love sports so much that I can just say I want to watch the sports. That's the most important thing. But there is a bit of idealism in me about when people do things the right way, I feel an extra joy. Nate brought that up. When K-State wins, it's awesome to me. But when Bruce Weber, if he won a national championship or something, doing it the way he is, I would just be, you know, it'd be so unbelievably more special. And when you're bringing your question up, the Chiefs are doing it the right way. The Chiefs are doing it the right way in the face of an NFL where Bill Belichick says, no, don't worry about the players. Don't worry about the rules. Winning's all that matters. Don't worry about the owner. He'll have his fun when he comes before he gets into town. You know, let's let's go. I like the Chiefs' way of doing it a lot better. So there will be. It's easier to love the Chiefs every day for not only because they're the Chiefs, but because of the way they're doing things.
Hey, you know that is the essence of sports: is you stick with your teams through the good and the bad, and there are times when your team is easy to root for, and there's other times when you kind of dislike your own team. You know, like,
I look at people, do they stick with their team when you dislike them?
Yeah.
And that's why I can't change. I got to give me all the heat about how bad the Cowboys are, because I agree.
I'm just wanting this scale to just tip a little 1%. That's all I want to
keep doing these things. The Chiefs may have you. Talk to me next year. When are you coming back on the show? You're going to be here next week, next year?
I'll be here next Monday. You won't be here then.
Okay.
Well,
hey, we're going to give Steven days off. We're going to have 8 days off. I'll be around on some Fridays.
So
let's talk about this again.
For those of us that have attention deficit disorder like myself, Stan, tell everybody once again where they can watch you this weekend, what you're going to be doing this weekend.
35 hours and 10 minutes or so 15 minutes. If things don't change, I'm going to get it broadcast a live football game, an all-star football game, the Kansas All-Star Shrine Bowl game. Strong legs run so weak legs can walk. Kids who need to go to the Shriners Hospital get free service, free, because of games like this and the money it's made. This will be my 34th year doing the games. Hopefully, you can watch it on KansasShrineBowl.com online, or you can go watch it on the television, hopefully on all your cable systems. I believe the game's going to be on. How exciting will it be to watch
football,
live football? Mm. I think Todd Lebo might even turn into a high school all-star football game tomorrow.
Could do it. Why not?
So,
bring it.
I'm so excited that we're playing real sports and I get a chance to broadcast, just like you.
Yep.
You know, congratulations. I know how much excitement there is that you got to do a sporting game, and you got to do one tonight if things don't change before the game starts.
You don't take any of these
things. So you know what I
feel
like.
Yeah,
this is
absolutely
an honor. It's an honor to be able to broadcast. Every time we do,
11
hours. If you took it away from us,
count it down.
And the games are the best.
Yep.
I mean, this is awesome. This is fun.
Nah, but the games, that's what
it's games
about.
Are really, really the best. And so
no doubt about it.
I'm glad for the 34th straight year, if we get this done tomorrow, that I'll be doing the Shrine Bowl.
Well, we can feel your excitement, and we love your passion, Stan. Thank you so much for the time. Have a great call, and have a great weekend.
Okay, you have a great call tonight as well.
All right, that is Stan Weber. We're going to get the weather forecast for that Shrine Bowl and much more with Gary Lezak right after this.